Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jason.
Hello from the Pacific Northwest.
Yeah, this is our Pacific Northwest show. Welcome to the land of mountains and
flannel.
Yeah, flannel. Lots of flannel.
Sure. Yeah, it's the Northwest cast. In Seattle, it's Dan Morin.
Hello.
And I'm in Eugene, Oregon. So,
how does Eugene feel about it?
Well, I don't know. I'm not even going to go there. I am in you, right? We'll do that joke.
Yeah, sure.
Hey, so anyway, about Spotify.
Ah, yes.
Yeah, I saw you posted a link to Apple's response to Spotify's response.
Would you like to respond to that?
I hope somebody applauds Apple on their restraint in not posting a whole website about how fair they are to counter Spotify's website about how unfair they are.
I have to say that, you know, if this it occurred to me that if Steve Jobs were still alive, perhaps that message would have been more colorful. I don't know. Or
thoughts on Spotify.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, and I mean, I wrote a thing for Tom's Guide this week that was basically they're both at fault partially here.
Yeah,
because I don't think either, like, and Apple's thing calls out a lot of the things that I called out, which is Spotify not only has their app has been approved many, many times, but the times that it's not been approved, it's because Spotify has done a bunch of shifty things to try and weasel around rules that everybody knows are the rules. And you can dislike the rules and you can complain about them publicly, which they have now. But one of the reasons that Spotify has had so much trouble in terms of their dealings with Apple has been that they've been rejected for doing sneaky things to try and get around the rules. And that's really annoying. And they're, you know, trying to put themselves on as like, we're just here because we think this is the right thing to do, when it's really like, we're just here because we have a big revenue stream that we don't want to pay as much to a third party as we do,
and
what it's about.
And Apple, right. And Apple's not, I mean, they're not altruistic either. They're a company. They're here to make money. And
absolutely.
Yeah, there's a lot of challenges, and there's been a lot of talk there's always been a lot of talk about the cut that Apple takes. And in the early days of the App Store, I feel like people were much more willing to say, Apple, take your 30%. This is like a whole new market. Like, we've got a lot of opportunity here. But as that market has become more and more mature, I think people have been a little more, you know, not the people have wanted to see that cut diminish a little bit because the market has been established.
Right.
And it feels onerous. But at the same time, you know, it's not to say that Apple shouldn't get some money for its running of the store. And as I thought was a really interesting point was the whole idea that a huge percentage of the apps on the App Store are free and thus essentially piggybacking off that infrastructure for nothing.
Yeah, what Ben Thompson of Stratechery calls a lot of Apple's practice these days, though, is rent-seeking. It's the idea that, you know, we have this nice place to be and you need to pay us, and like you're not paying us for anything really other than the fact that we own this and you need we say you pay us,
right?
And you know, it is true that Apple after a year has now scaled it down, so you only pay 15% after that. I think that there's a very strong case to be made that one of the reasons that Apple's thing has value, it's not just that they're, you know, yes, they are doing the credit card processing fees and you're paying for the servers and all of that, and they've got a whole App Store infrastructure in terms of approving apps and scanning apps and also their new editorial things that they're doing. That's all true. I think the biggest argument in Apple's favor here is by creating a single convenient account that you've already linked to a credit card, it makes it so easy to buy things through in-app purchase, whether it's a subscription or an app or an in-app purchase, just straight to your credit card. It goes on your bill from Apple. You don't have to go, like, it's not like on the web where you're like, oh boy, I haven't been at this site before. I was just buying some plane tickets and it's just like, oh boy, here we go. I gotta get in one password and does it get all my things right? No, it doesn't. I've got to put in my security code and all of that. And Apple has removed a lot of friction, which is why I think that even in a world where other payment alternatives were allowed, I think a lot of people would just use Apple's thing because it's so much easier than anything else. But I think that's the core of it, is what Spotify saying, and I think it really goes for Amazon, is the perfect example of like ebooks and comics and stuff like that. Comixology is another, you know, they're owned by Amazon now. That those are low margin reselling businesses that cannot take 30% off the top. And Apple competes with them, and Apple doesn't take 30% off the top of itself. Yeah. And that's super unfair.
Right.
And they can't do an alternative other than, and they can't tell you you have to go to the web to do it. And going to the web degrades the user experience. And that's the problem I have with this whole thing, is it's not that Apple isn't charging for a service it provides. It's that it demands that you use it. You can't use anything else. You can't admit that anything else exists.
Right.
And even if you find that alternative, it is a degraded experience for the user.
Yeah.
So it's bad all around.
Right. And I'd wondered for a while, I think I wrote a piece on this a year or two ago, but the weird bifurcation of the iTunes payment methods and Apple Pay, which are both very similar technologies,
right,
both backed by Apple, and yet used for totally different things. And mm-hmm. I'd always wondered if maybe there was some sort of structure they could work out there where it's like, all right, you can use Apple Pay and charge, like, we'll charge you a lower percentage or something because we're making money from Apple Pay. And then if you want, like, sort of the more, you know, experience where it's, like, more integrated or something, we can use, you know, use the iTunes account or something. I don't know. It seems weird that they have both of those.
Yeah. I think Apple Pay, you know, the difference there is in Apple Pay is a specific credit card transaction. And with a lot of these small transactions,
right,
they roll them up together and they save money.
Yes.
Apple saves money.
Yep.
And so Apple doesn't want to switch everything to Apple Pay because
sure,
they'll make less money on the transactions.
Right, right. But I think the other nail that you sort of mentioned there that, you know, needs to be hit on the head.
Okay, good. I was waiting for the
I got
metaphor.
There. I circled
okay,
around.
Thank you.
I circled
thank
around.
You.
It's earlier than I'm used to.
Yeah, I know. And then more Northwestern for both of us.
The fact that Apple has a music service and runs the store, which is also ties into the stuff that came up in the last couple of weeks about politicians who want to break up Apple. And or big tech companies where it's like you run the store and you compete with
right,
some of the stuff that's in the store. And I do think there are problems there, right? Like Apple is running its own music service and also running a platform on which music services want to be. And to your point about the prices, like Apple doesn't have to charge a 30% overhead. They can just mm-hmm. sell their own service. So it's a complicated situation, and there's clearly at least some conflict of interest there. And as much as Apple is going to try to be like, you know, we kind of stay out of it, we are, you know, our app store is an open platform and et cetera, there's always going to be some friction. And, you know, we've seen stuff in the past 6 months or so that people have complained about in terms of like notifications, right? About like pushing notifications for, oh,
right,
sign up for Apple Music. And like, it's clear that Apple is, I don't think that they are super malicious about it, but there's always going to be the temptation when you have your own product and it's competing with other products that use your platform to stack the deck slightly in your favor or nudge people towards your product. And I think that is a real challenge when it comes to a lot of the giant tech companies that have their fingers in so many pies, is just how do you compete with something that's that big and has so much of an advantage when it comes to like ecosystem and lock-in and all of that. And I think that's something that's going to have to be looked at by no matter who does end up eventually making the laws in this country.
Yeah, and Spotify knows where the wind is blowing, right? Like Spotify's thing, this is I think not a coincidence that mm-hmm. it's right now that they're doing this. They've been complaining about this for a while, but they want to start something in the EU, right?
Right.
They're initiating a proceeding there, and they know that this is a conversation that big tech is kind of on the run a little bit, and most of that is not pointed at Apple. But if you've got an axe to grind at Apple, then now would be a good time to get it out there. And when Nilay Patel from The Verge asked Elizabeth Warren about her breakup big tech companies, and he asked about Apple, she was like, "Oh yes," but her specifics were, I think, not great. And Ben Thompson
sure.
wrote
yep.
his, you know, and I linked to it on Six Colors, wrote a great piece about called Why Warren's Wrong. And it's not wrong to analyze Apple. It's her analysis is wrong, or at least suggests that her analysis is very simplistic, and that the ways tech companies exploit their power are they vary.
Yep.
And that what you don't want to do is come with a resolution that doesn't actually solve the core problem. And like saying to Apple, because saying to Apple, like, you can't run the App Store or you can't put apps on your platform is kind of ridiculous. And as Ben said, try to imagine the iPhone without apps on it. It's like, what, huh? Like, no. But there are, and Ben goes into them, like, there are a lot of really good examples of ways that big tech companies, including Apple, do use their power in ways that, that should probably be curtailed, or at least are arguable that they should be curtailed. And I like Ben's piece a lot, and he followed it up with another piece about contracts being a big part of it too.
Yeah.
That they get people to into these contracts that are super anti-competitive.
Yeah.
And that's not cool either.
Yeah, I think the thing that comes to mind for me is the whole the whole ebook case that we had a few years ago, which was
right.
I, not to relitigate it literally, but there was no arguing, I think, that Apple did engage in shady behavior. That said, the fact that they then slapped them down has essentially not solved the overall problem of lack of competition in the ebook market.
Right, because they were more concerned about collusion than they were about the dominance of a single player in ebooks.
And that's fine. In certain extent, like, collusion is something in that case where there was kind of a smoking gun about, like, well, you guys clearly did arrange for price fixing, and that is illegal. But it was not a look at the overall industry in terms of how do we combat the fact that so much of this industry is dominated by Amazon. And maybe that's just because there is a harder and more less popular case to make there. Mm-hmm. But it's still something that's going to, in the end of the day, be what has a bigger impact is just their outsized dominance there. And so you can't take a one-size-fits-all approach to all these tech companies. Like, they all have challenges. They're all doing things that are probably verging on anti-competitive behavior, but they kind of exert their power in different ways. And like you said, I think her approach, I like Elizabeth Warren a lot. She's my senator, so and I think she tends to have a history of meaning well, but in this case, I think she just needed somebody who had a better grasp of these particulars, because not everybody, you're not going to be an expert on everything, right? Like, anybody who's making those kinds of pronouncements is going to have their areas of expertise, but they're not going to be, like, fully briefed in on how every single company does their business. And we probably know a lot more about how Apple does its business than she does. But that's why you find people who actually, are well informed on this topic and can speak to, like, what is the actual action you should take here?
Yeah, and to be fair, it's a presidential campaign, right?
Yeah.
So in some ways, what she really wants to do is just get the conversation going. But there is a point at which, as this conversation is rolling, as a senator and a presidential candidate, there needs to be, somebody needs to have some specifics. And that's, that's my concern, is that these proposals seem kind of bizarre and backward. But I don't know. It's a strange time, and I think I think I agree in general that the tech companies have way too much influence in everything. For me, the bottom line, especially about Apple, is that competition should exist. That's the bottom line. Competition should exist, and Apple should be confident that its products can compete. And what I don't like to see is lesser products being artificially protected.
Right.
Because they otherwise couldn't compete. And that's the that's like for books. I think Apple's sales in the Books app bookstore, it's not the iBookstore anymore, I guess.
Yeah, right.
I suspect those are artificially inflated, and they're probably not great, but they're probably artificially inflated by the fact that it's just a better experience to buy books on iOS in the Books app than it is in the Kindle app.
Like,
unless you have a Kindle, the books experience is better. And Apple Music is a good example where there are lots of ways to compete, but platform, if you're competing and differentiating because you run the platform,
right,
that's not great. I mean, maybe it's within your rights to do it. Maybe regulators will have a look, but I don't like what it says about that product if Apple feels like the real way that they beat Spotify is by using all their power in some other area to kill Spotify. Because to me, that's when the bell goes off, and I'm like, oh no, you should compete on the quality of your product.
Right. I mean, and that was the great point. I actually did like that they made in the notes against Spotify was sort of hearkening back to the launch of the iTunes Store and how at the time, when Steve Jobs announced the iTunes Store, his whole point was, you can't beat piracy, but you can compete against it and make a product that is more, like, as if not more convenient than going out and pirating the same music. And when given the option, most people will choose to take a legal route as long as it's not super onerous compared to, like, stealing things. And that worked. It worked really well. And so, you know, the lesson to take away from that is just, you know, like you said, build a better product. So
lots of shifting gears, lots of Apple announcements this week. Apple is doing stuff. They announced that there's an Apple event that was rumored, the services event, March 25th. And they set officially the WWDC date, June 3rd through 7th. And they're going to have people, you know, apply for the limited number of tickets that are available for that as developers. And our calendar's filling up. I feel like Apple has stirred from its winter slumber and is now on the move.
Apple is coming.
Apple is awake and moving. And we're starting to see them make announcements and stuff.
Yeah, that's going to be an interesting few months here, because I think, you know, the March event, you know, we've all assumed that it's about the streaming service and maybe the streaming news service or the subscription news service, which people have been talking about, and that's kind of it. But that's like, will that stuff launch then? Will it launch a month
right.
later?
And
like,
the game thing, too, whatever form that takes,
I've heard
the Netflix
that as well.
For games thing, that I've said that in a couple of places now, that was reported on, where was that? Cheddar, I think, reported that, and then nobody else has talked about it since then. And I did hear through the grapevine about, like, about developers who are, you know, pulling releases aside to wait for
I had
this.
Also heard some whispers about that coming,
yeah.
And so... Interesting,
but
positioning
right?
on that.
Yeah, so I'm fascinated by that. I feel like there's got to be a lot of big picture stuff. How do they fill 90 minutes? Is they're going to have stars and they're going to have trailers and they're going to have stuff like that, and they're going to go through how great the Apple News thing is with all of the partners that they're going to have on board at launch, and they're going to have details, and they're going to probably have a bundle, and, you know, they can fill 90 minutes, but it's going to be weird. And you know, again, I don't imagine that there will be any hardware announcements, or at least any substantial hardware announcements. Maybe they announce that AirPlay is on all the Rokus. We've
right.
heard that's happening. There might even be some Amazon announcement, because I know they're working closer with Amazon. It wouldn't surprise me if this is part of that too. That's going to be a weird one. I did get an invite for that one. So I'm, you know, my chances of running into superstars like, you know, Jennifer Aniston, or let's be honest here, Ron Moore, who was on Star Trek and does Battlestar Galactica and Outlander and all that. Like, I have a slight chance. My guess is there will be a velvet rope separating us from the
A-list. Well, Ron Moore went to my college, so there you go.
Okay, good for you.
Talking point for you.
Yeah, that's right. Hey, did you know Dan Warren? No, you probably didn't, but he went to your college.
He's considerably older than I am.
Yeah,
so, yeah.
He is. So anyway, yeah, I don't know. Between that and WWDC, there's a lot there. I don't know. It's just, I'm joking, but I think that there is, they went through kind of a quiet period where they were like, we're not ready. And now they're like gearing up for
It was also tough this year in particular, because so much of the early part of the year was dominated by the whole missing the guidance in that quarter.
Yeah.
And like everything kind of felt, there's a little doom and gloom atmosphere, not like of just being like, oh, there's nothing coming and all the news was bad. So it's, you know, I think
you gear up for the holiday quarter.
Sure.
And then this
absolutely.
Is the letdown. I think that there's like, you know, do you really want to roll a product out there in late January? Probably
right.
not.
Right.
So,
yeah,
you know, but we're back in it now.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff that's going to be happening, which is great. I did my Macworld piece this week. I decided to skip looking at the streaming event for this week's piece and jump ahead to WWDC. Just get my hot takes in early.
Nice.
On what's going on with WWDC.
Congratulations.
So thank you. I did a little rundown of just like things to expect and things to think about for like Apple setting its agenda, because, you know, WWDC, I argue WWDC is the biggest Apple event of the year. I know the iPhone event gets more attention, but I think the WWDC one really points to, this is kind of where Apple is going. This is our like table setting menu for what is happening for the next year of our software platforms. And to me, that feels like a bigger deal, because it's really talking about where they're where they're headed and what they see as priorities. And yeah, so
I think this is the biggest, most kind of earth-shattering. I mean, their whole thing is like, your mind will be blown.
Yeah, right, right.
It's going to be huge, I think.
Yeah.
For the future of all the platforms.
Yeah, exactly. So kind of thinking about what are the things we have heard and where are the things that we can sort of think about them maybe going based on what else is happening. You know, even like, because the stuff that we learn in a couple weeks is going to inform that, right? Like, we're looking at the streaming service and the new service, it's probably going to tell us a little bit about like where tvOS is going, maybe some iOS and macOS implications for some of those things. Like, it might give us a few more data points to connect the dots between. But then we're going to have a little while before we roll into serious major announcement season.
I think I'm going to pick this as a draft pick, but I want to ask your take on this for the services event. Where do you think the video service is going to go on the Mac? Does it go in iTunes?
Oh, jeez.
Or does it go in a new app? Or does it go in a web page?
My inclination of the three of the... Okay, here's what... I'll divide it up between what I hope for and what I think might actually happen. I think the right answer is it goes in a new app. I think that Apple should make a version of the TV app that's on iOS and on the
right.
TVOS, and they should deploy that.
Can they put that out for Mojave, or do they have to wait for this fall?
I think they could put it out for Mojave. I don't see a reason they couldn't do sort of a slipstream.
Well, I was imagining that it would be Marzipan. And current Marzipan
sense.
Doesn't do like picture-in-picture and full screen and stuff, apparently, according to Steve Trotton Smith. That's what stops me, because I think that is the logical answer, except I'm not sure they could do it now. But that wouldn't necessarily stop them from doing it in the fall and falling back to like either iTunes or just a web page.
Yeah.
Like, putting their video services behind you know, like on a web page where you can watch it just like Netflix and Amazon and literally everybody else, because that's their solution on the desktop, is just watch it on the web. Is not the worst thing in the world to have,
no,
regardless. And then you can say the new OS has a native app, but
right.
Everybody gets to use this web page.
Yeah, I think what will be interesting about that will be they'll get a little bit of backlash from the Mac, especially the Mac community, who will be like, are we second-class citizens? Like, why are we relegated to a web app when we could have a native app?
They could announce that coming this fall, the TV app will be
fair.
In the next version of Mac OS, but in the meantime, it'll be on you know, every version of Mac OS can see it in Safari.
I think we agree that the worst-case scenario and the thing that I'm afraid that they will do is shove it in iTunes.
Stick in iTunes?
With everything else.
Oh, boy.
And like, it's just started to feel like maybe we were getting away from iTunes being the crazy huge mess that it is, and then that would feel like a step backwards to be like, and we shove the video in.
If I were Apple, I would not want to touch the iTunes code base ever again. I would have a plan to go to the iOS code base in the next version of the operating system and put those apps in addition to iTunes, and let iTunes just sort of sit there in the background as a legacy app for a long time.
Yep.
But you know, that would require some other engineering. But again, I think like having, if you want to be everywhere, having a video service that's available, logging into a web page solves it for
sure.
All your, you know, all it solves it for Chromebooks, it solves it for Windows, and it solves it for old versions of Mac OS.
Yeah,
so it's like,
that's
if you're going to do one, maybe that's the one you do.
Yeah, it's very, Apple has never been great about web-based stuff, right? Like, there wasn't even a web-based... I mean, there's still not a web-based version of the iTunes store.
Right. There's for media stuff. Like, the iCloud stuff is not bad, but right. There's no music player, I think, on the web, which is weird, because you've got your whole cloud music library. You should theoretically be able to just log into a web page and play your library.
It was a super long time before there was even, like, a web-based preview system on the where you could like look at an album on the web.
No, it's absolutely true. Absolutely true. And I don't know what infrastructure they're using for this. It's possible that it is an infrastructure that would be conducive to putting in iTunes.
I agree with you
that.
I think that letting iTunes die in the vine would not be the worst decision that they've ever made. If they can supplant it with native apps later, you know, or Marzipan or whatever. Like,
let's face it, it's already a raisin, Dan.
Yeah, I every once in a while I still have to launch it, and I'm like, oh yeah, this is. It just feels like it's from a different. It's such a different era.
It is. It is. I use it every day because I listen to music on my Mac, and I use iTunes, and it's fine for that. Actually, I don't mind it as a music player. I mind it as everything else.
Right.
But
right.
As a music player, it's fine. It's fine. It's not great, but and it hasn't gotten a lot of love recently. But it's fine. In fact, if they came out with a music app, I might stick with iTunes for playing music because my guess is that it will be a more powerful, pleasant experience to be able to use iTunes for music playback.
If anything, you know, if we've been shown anything, it's the idea that like if they brought something over from you know iOS or whatever, it would be like, well, it's got way fewer features, but it's much nicer in a more modern app and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But, like, they would not bother with so many of the features that are in iTunes because it simply doesn't make sense.
Yeah. Yeah. Although some of them would. I mean, I also hold out some hope that it would motivate them to make those apps a little more feature-rich, especially on Mac and iPad. That you know just maybe but yeah it's never going to be able to do all the things that iTunes does because a lot of the things iTunes does most people don't care about anymore.
Yep.
It was something that was a priority 5 years 10 years ago, not now. So I don't know. That'll be one that I'll be watching, and probably for the upgrade draft I will have to pick, I'll have to predict something there and put some points out for that one. But
no.
Well, we'll see. We got another week before that that comes up, a little week in a few days, so we got a little bit more time. I gotta get my 8x10 glossies of various people linked to Apple and a Sharpie ready so that I can collect some autographs. I've collected like 3 autographs in my entire life. I only have one signed 8x10 glossy, and that was because I saw recently passed away W. Morgan Shepherd at Comic-Con 1 year, who was Blank Reg on Max Headroom and was in Doctor Who and Star Trek and Star Trek and more Star Trek and many other things. And I love that guy. And I gave him $20 for an 8x10 signed because that's the only time I've literally ever done that because I got to say hello to him, and I have a picture of him now. And then when he died, I was like, oh, it's so sad. I got to meet him, though. That's great.
The only one that's in our house is one that I got a couple years ago when I went to Star Wars Celebration. I got a signed picture from Dennis Lawson, the Scottish actor who played Wedge Antilles.
Right.
And because my fiance is a huge Wedge fan, and so I got a personalized signed picture for her that we framed and is in my office now.
Super on brand for you.
It's super on brand, but also I feel like you, kind of obscure character actor who's been in some other things, but like we really like him for, you know, this weird their sci-fi street cred. But I do have my other story about that I do have is a totally random one where I sent away 1 year for a Christmas present for my mom. I wrote and managed to get a signed picture from Colin Firth, who is like her favorite actor of all time. And so I was like, I will never top this as a present ever again. It's like the best thing I've ever gotten her.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, so that's like my only the only time I've ever gotten like the signed celebrity things. But there's a lot of celebrities here this weekend at the convention I'm at. I will probably not get autographs from any of them because I don't want to wait in lines or pay the money.
Sure, but that's good. So yes, you are. Well, as we go, because I have to go. But you're at the Emerald City Comic Con in Seattle.
Yep.
Are you making any appearances as author Dan Morin?
I am, and you know, we'll see. Depending on how fast this goes up, I'm doing a signing at this very day, Friday the 15th at 11:15 in the University Bookstore booth at Emerald City Comic Con. I'll be signing copies of my book for about an hour.
I'm pretty sure people will need a time machine to get there.
Sad, but maybe they can find one somewhere.
What would be better is somebody. Well, you should say hello to the subscribers who came and you saw them, and then when somebody says they're a Six Colors subscriber, you can tell them that you said hello to them on the podcast today.
Yes,
and
well, absolutely.
It'll work retroactively. So say hello to those people now.
Hello, Six Color subscribers. Thank you so much for coming to my signing. I really appreciate it. It was very nice meeting all of you in person, and. Joe, I'm sure everything will be fine with that thing we talked about. I wish you the best.
See? Now you just have to go forward in time, which most of us are time travelers moving forward in time, and then reference this as if it's this is a service we provide. It's time travel related greetings.
It's a real Bill and Ted moment here.
I was going to say, did you know that I love the movie Primer or Primer, as some people mispronounce it? I do. Now I got to get it in a cardboard box and travel backward in time. Anyway, that's spoilers for Primer/Primer. Which is, I love that movie. I also love reading articles trying to explain that movie. That's one of my hobbies.
It's a really nice little cottage industry.
Yeah, it's not bad. Charts, there are a lot of charts too, trying to explain it. It can't be explained. Anyway, I think it's time for me to go wander around the University of Oregon campus. For those who are our Six Color subscribers, listeners, yes, this is an accepted student's day, and we're here. My daughter and I are here to get like the campus tour and stuff like that, because this is one of the places she got in, as everybody knows, because she was accepted literally live on the podcast, and we're going to go check it out. And it's definitely a contender for her, so we're going to do that. I'm not going to sign any books.
I mean, you could. No one.
I could just go in the university bookstore. Ooh, oh man, if they have the Bayern agenda.
I was a step ahead of you, and I didn't like where that was going.
If they have the Bayern agenda, I am going to sign it with my name.
That'll be a collector's item right there.
That'll be a keepsake. Actually, you know, we should make a guarantee that if somebody complains that I signed a book that they bought of yours, that you will send them a book plate, right?
Absolutely. I'd be happy to do that.
You can cover up my name.
To this day, I'm really sad I didn't buy. I saw a copy of one of my friend Mike Cole's books in a local bookstore here that had been signed by fantasy author Scott Lynch. And I was like, I'm sad that I didn't buy it to this day, because I think that would have been amazing.
That's very funny. All right. Well, off to our various Northwestern things and Nirvana, Pearl Jam, Soundgarden, I guess.
Sure. Rain, Fog, Mount Rainier.
Toss salads and scrambled eggs. They're calling again. Good night, Seattle. We love you. Goodbye, Dan.
Goodbye, Jason.